GHRT Rewinds are brought to you by Laughlin and Wolfington Realty. Mike and Nate and Harrison teaming up to help you sell your home faster and for top dollar.
This is the George Hale Rick Tyler Show. This is the Newsmakers Hour, and we got a legal brief special calling in 2 weeks in a row now. Gee, it's Brett Baber of Lanham, Blackwell & Baber back on line three for GHRT.
Hi, Brett. Good morning.
Hey, George. Welcome back to Maine.
Yeah, I'm right back here with you.
Right back where he started from, Florence Nightingale. Maxine Nightingale, not Florence Nightingale.
Florence Nightingale.
Maxine Nightingale sang that beautiful hit from the 1970s. You've been digging into the ruling that came down, and you hinted to it last week. Sharon Kennedy's attorney appealing her conviction. Maine Supreme Court saying no, but there was dissension. Tell us about it, Brett.
Well, there was a vigorous dissent by Justice Jabbar to one aspect of the ruling. As everyone recalls, Ms. Sharon Carrillo, who changed her name back to Kennedy, was convicted of the depraved indifference murder of her, I believe, 10-year-old daughter, Marissa Kennedy, and she received a 48-year sentence in prison. Just so we're all on the same page, depraved indifference murder is causing the death of another human being in a situation that manifests a depraved indifference to the value of human life. And this case meets that definition precisely, where there was ongoing abuse of this poor little 10-year-old over months and months and months until the point that her heart finally gave out. Ms. Kennedy, everyone might recall, claimed that she had, and I don't think there was really any dispute, a reduced intellect, very low intellectual capacity herself, and was also subjected to abuse from time to time by her then husband, Julio Carrillo. And she made four challenges to the conviction and sentence. She challenged the denial of her motion to suppress, which was based on, again, an argument based on her limited intellectual capacity. She also moved for a mistrial, and this is the one that caused the dissent, where the defense called the state forensic psychologist, and on cross-examination, the state asked the psychologist about whether or not the psychologist had heard about or read about a supposed confession by Ms. Carrillo to her cellmate or the lady in the next cell, Shauna Gatto, also convicted of a murdering of a young child. And that's what drew the dissent. And then there was a challenge to the jury instructions on accomplice liability and a request for a duress instruction that Justice Murray at trial declined to give. And then there was a challenge to the 48-year sentence. So those are the issues on appeal, and the majority, the decision was written by Justice Ellen Gorman, and the majority opinion is about 32 pages long, so we can parse through it however you'd like.
I looked at, everybody was shocked to their very core with this case. This was one of those cases that just everybody was disappointed with. From the legal standpoint, that's where we're going here today, not the human thing is obvious. The majority of the justices, that would be Gorman, Humphrey, Horton, Connors, Meade, by the way, didn't participate in it. The dissent by the Justice Joseph Jabbar, he wanted the mistrial on the confession of Gatto, right? And then he also talked about, I guess, the mental capacity. Those are the two issues I wondered about going into this. We don't have a unanimous decision on this. This is a little unusual.
Sure. And Justice Jabbar, in fairness, isn't suggesting that Ms. Carrillo walk free. He was suggesting in his dissent, and by a dissent means the majority of his colleagues disagreed with him, but he thought it was very important to write a dissent. And the the issue he's talking about was the trial court's denial of a mistrial. So what happened? Very long trial. The defense calls two experts late in the trial. You know, the defense goes second. They called their own psychologist to say that, you know, there's this very high likelihood that these confessions were false confessions. And they explained in detail to the jury what this whole idea of false confession was. And then to sort of, you know, belt and suspenders that, the defense called the state forensic psychologist, Sarah Miller, to basically get a Me Too opinion from her that, yes, this indeed presents, due to, you know, Ms. Carrillo's very low intellectual functioning, a prime situation where there could be false confessions, keeping in mind that the court has already denied her motion to keep those confessions out of evidence. So now they're attacking the validity of the confessions in front of the jury at trial. So the state gets to cross-examine the state forensic psychologist, Sarah Miller. And the last two questions of the trial were something to the effect, and I don't have the transcript, were you aware, and I'm portraying the state's attorney probably poorly, but were you aware, Ms. Miller, that Ms. Carrillo had made a similar confession to Shauna Gatto on one or more occasions? And of course, objection, Your Honor, and things go sideways at the trial, and they go scurrying up to the bench, and they start talking in hushed tones so the jury doesn't hear them, and they might have even adjourned the trial and sent the jury out while they talk through this issue. The court ruled that that question was calling for a hearsay response, meaning it was out of court testimony. You know, Ms. Gatto was not there in the courtroom to testify to this. She could have been called as a witness. In fact, we talked about that back at the time of this trial. But the trial court said, yeah, it's hearsay. I'm going to strike the question, and I don't know if there was an answer, but I'm striking that question, and the answer is violative of the hearsay rule. The next thing the defense does, motion for mistrial, Your Honor. And Justice Murray did an analysis and decided, well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to give the jury what's called a curative instruction, basically telling you to ignore the elephant that was just released in the courtroom. So ladies and gentlemen of the jury, you've just heard some testimony that I have ruled as inadmissible, and I instruct you that it's your duty not to give any consideration to that evidence that you just heard. And then Justice Murray, in his closing jury instructions, would issue a similar instruction. Well, then it went to verdict, and the verdict was against Ms. Carrillo, who then appeals to the law court. And this is where we have the disagreement between the majority and Justice Jabbar. The majority basically saying, you know, Justice Murray did everything correctly. There's nothing to show that the jury wouldn't follow the curative instructions, and that it was well within the trial court's discretion to overrule the motion for mistrial. And this is where Justice Jabbar, I think, makes a very important point, because if this case doesn't call for a mistrial, there isn't a case that would warrant a mistrial. And I'm overstating that a bit, but he's basically saying that Ms. Carrillo was denied a fair trial because of exceptionally, and that's his word, exceptionally prejudicial testimony during the cross-examine of the state forensic witness. And he basically went on to explain that the core of the defense, you know, now that the suppression has been denied, the core of the defense was these are false confessions. And all the confessions made to the police were false. And now you've got the state at the very last minute of the trial, and the last witness, the last two questions, are asking this witness about some purported confession to a jailhouse colleague of Ms. Carrillo's. And he just thought that was beyond fair, and was emphasizing that it was undermining the entire defense theory of the case, and there were other better ways of doing this. Now, he didn't say the state acted in bad faith, but he said that, you know, a confession to another woman who was not a member of law enforcement was especially damaging to the defense and blew the holes in the expert opinions. Now, Monday morning quarterbacking, the defense is probably scratching their heads saying, why did we ever call that state witness? This wouldn't happen. And that's one of the vagaries of trying criminal cases. You get these unexpected events, and it's very hard to correct the damage once it's occurred in the courtroom.
A listener writes to us, and we agree, how odd is it that Sharon Kennedy Carrillo and Ms. Gatto would both be cellmates, if you will, because both women are facing charges in the death of a youngster. And also going back, Brett, this is where you take a victory lap. When this happened, you did a legal brief special. You came on our program especially to talk about those last two questions, and you said this would come up. This would be the reason for an appeal, and sure enough, it happened. Now, looking forward, I don't know. I think Sharon Kennedy is now out of appeals.
Yes. She always has the habeas corpus route where she can challenge the effectiveness of counsel. From all accounts, the attorneys for the defense in this case did a wonderful job. And I don't mean to suggest at all that there's any grounds for criticism. I think they did an extraordinary job in a very difficult case. But when you're facing the 48-year sentence, you're going to look at anything and everything. And that's her last avenue is, I suppose she could try to appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court. The suppression issue is something that, the U.S. Supreme Court, there is U.S. Supreme Court case law on it. It's a topic they consider. I seriously doubt that the U.S. Supreme Court would undertake a review of this case on the suppression issue, particularly because Maine actually has a higher standard for the issue that was before the court. In Maine, a confession has to be proven voluntary beyond a reasonable doubt, whereas at the Supreme Court level, it only has to be proven by a preponderance of the evidence. So she's already getting the benefit of a higher standard of proof under Maine law. And the law court, in denying the or upholding the suppression ruling, basically found that she went through three interviews, she was Miranda'd several times, and most importantly, she was the one providing the details to the police. They were asking her rather open-ended questions. They weren't just cross-examining her, and they would ask her open-ended questions, and she would provide some of the details, some of which was very horrific, saying that... and I quote from the opinion, Carrillo gave the unsolicited response, I feel terrible. I killed my own child. And that testimony just has, tremendous power in front of a jury.
We're talking about law, not other things here. Under Maine law, duress doesn't specifically mean a victim of domestic violence. The judge did not include that information about duress in the jury instructions. Is that a weakness?
Well, that was one of the issues raised by the defense on appeal. And there again, George, you are earning your doctorate degree as a doctor of law. This was one of the key jury instructions the defense challenged because the trial court declined to do it. The law court affirmed that denial, basically saying there was no evidence that at the time of these events that Sharon Carrillo was under immediate distress from her husband. It would be one thing if Julio had a knife to her throat and said, you got to do these things to Marissa, or even threatened her, I'm going to kill you unless you do these things to Marissa. There wasn't any evidence of an immediate threat to Ms. Carrillo at the time that she was participating with Julio and doing all of these horrendous things that led to the death of Marissa. So the court ruled, yeah, we've got a duress defense, but you haven't proved the facts necessary to generate that defense for me to give that instruction to the jury. So that argument was denied on appeal as well.
Final moments here. Does this set a precedent for other future cases?
Yes. It always, every time we have a law court decision, it generally does have precedential value. It's a very thorough decision on the standards for motions to suppress for voluntariness grounds. We could look right to this case for those standards, the same standards for motion for mistrial. I think it's going to be really hard to get a mistrial granted unless something really horrendous occurs in the courtroom. And then we have the clarity of the court's decision on the jury instructions.
Well, we thank you for giving us the insight. By the way, I couldn't get you out of jail if your sentence was up, so don't put LLC after my name.
No, there's enough money in your account. You can bail them out, probably.
Might bail you out, yeah.
A lot of states, you don't need bail.
Brett Baber of Lanham, Blackwell & Baber, where do we find you online, good sir?
LanhamBlackwell.com.
GHRT Rewinds, brought to you by your hometown real estate team, Laughlin and Wolfington Realty. Thinking about selling your home? Call 629-9211 and start packing.